Okay, and we're going to talk in English, right?
Oh, my English is not so good.
Oh, you spoke English for 10 years.
Yeah, but I spoke mainly with Polish people, and, you know, it's not...
Okay, but it's all right, but my English is okay.
Sorry?
But my English is okay, so they're going to hear me more. let's do it in English.
Oh. Okay. So should I start? Okay. So I wrote an email to you 2 months ago. I had a few questions, and we agreed to do a podcast on these questions. So I wrote to you a quote from Srila Prabhupada that when a bhakta leaves, it's 50% the fault of the devotee and 50% the leaders of the or the movement. And I made an unusual comparison in my email that Srila Prabhupada's movement is
revolution
against Maya, and in the American army they say that they never leave anybody behind enemy lines, even if they are dead or wounded. So my questions are the following: how the movement take responsibility for that 50% their 50% fault, you know, like if somebody leaves the movement, how do they take responsibility for that 50%? This is one question.
Okay, let's start one at a time. That's one statement, but it's not a statement that Prabhupada repeated. Certainly not a statement where Prabhupada instituted some type of norms or some standards. And Prabhupada made other statements also in a war. I was just listening. He says we're in a battle with Maya. He says so there will be casualties. It's natural. And the Prabhupada said, Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur said there would be casualties. And so that was the end of it. Prabhupada didn't necessarily say, and you should spend half your time getting the casualties back. Of course, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't get the casualties back, or that we don't. Because now what's a casualty? Someone who leaves the movement. So there are different, that needs to be defined also. What does it mean that someone's left the movement? Devotees are engaged in full-time service. We use the word missionaries here now. And then they go from being a missionary to being a supporter. So they haven't left the movement. Leaving the movement is when they really stop engaging in any kind of active service and when they stop following the principles and chanting. So we have our counselor system now, which is specifically designed to be a support system separate from the service-oriented system, because the service only reaches as far as the service. So when you step outside the service, then sort of the relationship really decreases, because you don't have the same type of interaction. With the counselor system, then it's not based on service, it's just based on devotees wanting to associate with devotees and having a counselor completely independent of whether they're serving or not serving, whether they're full-time devotees or donors. So that then becomes the onus also of the devotees, that they recognize, that they recognize the need for that counselor system. So that's at least okay. At least if you you ask about what we're doing in terms of 50%, that's one thing. I spend a lot of my time talking to devotees who have, and other devotees do, who have sort of given up on those commitments. Then as far as those devotees who haven't, we're not talking about them really so much. Who are doing some service, who are participating, who are volunteering their time or their money, and who are sadhakas, and they practice and they stick to their vows. And of course it's a little different when someone's wounded. Because when someone's wounded, or someone falls behind the enemy lines, then he actually can't do anything. When devotees leave, it's not that they're actually wounded, it's that they don't want to do anything. In other words, they're not incapacitated. They've made a conscious choice. And it's a little more difficult to bring them in. You can't just drag them in like soldiers are going to drag someone else. And other, practically that's a standard military practice. We don't leave wounded behind. Yeah, so in that sense, the analogy is not, it's not that accurate, because it's easier to drag some wounded person back who wants to come back. They both want to come back, and it's easier to get a hold of them. It's just the enemy that you have to worry about. Here it's a little difficult. It's not so much the enemy, it's them themselves. Do they want to come back? But the counselor system is a very, very excellent way. But of course the devotees want to have to be also participate in that. You want to go further in that? I mean, there's a lot to talk on that point. There's a human limit also. I get 10 people a week wanting to give me advice. I get one person a month telling me, I'm here, tell me what to do. If I got 10 people a week asking me, offering up their services, then I may be able to use the advice. But I got lots of advice, but not enough people to put the advice into practice. So that's also, especially if you use the army, you got soldiers. You need the. So how capable, how much energy, or what is it that we actually really expect of so-called ISKCON to do? ISKCON is, it's not a word, it's not an army. Not like, certainly not like the American army, with all of its unlimited resources and money and manpower and backup. It's not a state. It's not even a wealthy religion. So sometimes it's the expectations that also have to be modified. Is what can you really expect of ISKCON to do? Certainly there are ideals and there's the goals, but then there's also what is it that we're capable of doing? And that's a big question. So sometimes people expect a lot, and defining expectations is an important thing. Defining what it is that people and ISKCON is able to do. But it's a concern, because for me, it's sometimes a great source of disappointment and sorrow to see devotees who are who did great amounts of service actually being victimized by the material energy.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you can't do anything. Doesn't mean that they won't talk to you. They won't talk to me. They'll talk to me 99% of the time. But whether they'll take the advice or not, that's something else.
Mm-hmm.
So like Prabhupada says, you throw somebody a lifeline, but if they don't grab it, what do you do? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Just the next question. Why devotees can't say that they left because they cannot get on well with the leaders? And what if this is the truth?
Is it the truth that they can't get on with the leaders sometimes? Sometimes leaders can't get on with devotees.
Mm-hmm.
The question is whether leaving is the option. I don't necessarily get along with everybody, but I have a service to do. And I remember that probably what I heard the most in family life from in terms of conversation between my parents was my father complaining about how unbearable the people who he was working with. Because
mm-hmm.
he was sort of a civilized person, and he was working with people who weren't sort of the same party. They were swearing and mm-hmm. and things like that. And he hadn't had experience of that type of life. So it goes on in the material world. Does everyone like their boss?
I know people who do.
Yeah? But does everybody like their boss? Does everyone get along with all their co-workers?
Mm-hmm.
Does everyone like their mother-in-law?
Mm-hmm.
Does everyone like, you know, so many people? So no, but either because you have to, the only way you get rid of your mother-in-law is you divorce your wife, so you may not want to do that. And then there's so many other people that you have to get along with for such practical reasons. Because it's your job, because you can't get another job, because there's some kind of family commitment. Which doesn't mean that there haven't been valid reasons why devotees in Krishna consciousness felt that, well, their situation was unbearable. But Prabhupada's overriding instruction that don't leave is still there. Yeah, it's Kali Yuga. What can you do? And most of the leaders, they didn't come to Krishna consciousness to become leaders. They didn't come to Krishna consciousness to tell other people what to do, to take financial responsibility, to all of a sudden be under the burden of management. They came to chant Hare Krishna to chant and be happy. But then they found themselves with all kinds of other situations, and the stress that comes along with leadership will always bring out the worst in someone.
Mm-hmm.
It'll bring out the good in them in the sense of what they're capable,
mm-hmm.
but often in personality it brings out the bad. When Yudhisthira, I just read Mahabharata about 6 months ago, when Yudhisthira Maharaj was leaving to go into exile, the citizens, they wanted to revolt against the who was the king? Yeah, Dhritarashtra, forgot. They wanted to revolt against Dhritarashtra. It was the whole gambling match was just it was all cheating. Everyone knows that Duryodhan is a rascal. Everyone knows that Yudhishthira Maharaj is legally the king and should be the king. So there was no justice in the whole thing. It was all unjust. And they wanted to revolt. But when Yudhishthira Maharaj, when he was leaving, he said, no, please don't do that. The principle is that the king should always be followed, seen as the representative of God. So my request to you all is that you follow Dhritarashtra, and that way you will be pleasing me. And those were his last words. So there's also a principle. It's like you raised the principle in the army. So it's a fact that sometimes there are really bad generals and so on who give wrong instructions. When they give instructions, you have to follow. Otherwise, the whole thing falls apart. You know, an army is built, an army, a business, a country is built on hierarchy and following hierarchy. And that doesn't mean that everything that they say is perfect and that you can't appeal it, but still the system of hierarchy has to remain intact. And if that goes out, you've got nothing. You don't have an international for Krishna consciousness. Everything becomes dysfunctional. So you can't lead, you can't have a Krishna consciousness movement, you can't have a state, you can't have an army, you can't have a business. You can always appeal, as Prabhupada said. If someone does something wrong, then you appeal. You go to the higher authority. And it's the same system everywhere. And if someone really does something wrong, you throw the politician in jail. Then you throw the leader in jail who made the wrong decision. But the system of following still has to be there in general principle, unless someone's really, really outrageous. Some Krishna conscious leader says to do something very outrageous. So it's a fine balance, you know. It's not so black and white, and it's not an easy thing. And it's only now Krishna consciousness movement. This is 2014, say 2015, and 50 years ago Prabhupada established ISKCON. Now in India we're setting up a college which is going to be an education for leaders, residents. But it takes 50 years to do that. And you know, they have I don't know, Alexander the Great didn't necessarily go to a military academy, but now they do have military academies where they teach people how to be good leaders. And in the business field, now there's also come across that it's not enough to just have good karma, but you know, you should teach people. So you have business management and university, and they have all kinds of training courses. It takes time. And it'll take more time in the future for things to really be working in Krishna consciousness as they should. In the meantime, we're doing our best. I'm an engineer. I'm not trained to be a manager. I'm not trained to do these things. So I had to do a lot of learning in the field. And people had to suffer as a consequence of that. Because I made mistakes. That's the way Prabhupada started it up. And he gives the example of the house is burning down. So, you know, the firemen come, they know what to do, but the neighbor, he may throw a bucket of water and he may hit you in the head with a bucket as well. But at least he's trying to put out the fire. Something else on that?
Yeah. Why devotees have to be afraid of telling what they think? Why they have to be condemned if they have doubts? And how can they get help if they cannot read in their mind?
But who says devotees cannot say what they think? You're saying what you think.
I don't want to bring up personal experiences, you know, but I know that sometimes there are situations when they...
Sometimes?
Yeah.
But it is, the devotees makes it sound like that's the way it is all the time.
No, it's just my question. I don't know how it works with everybody else, just something happened in my life with someone and that's why I ask. I don't know how it works in everybody else's life, but this is just my question. So
I don't know. My experience is that it depends on the individuals. We have a very absolute authoritarian system.
Mm-hmm.
So our whole philosophy is based on authority. So challenging authority, not just challenging authority, if I ask at the end of a class, anyone have any questions?
Mm-hmm.
Devotees are hesitant to ask questions, not necessarily because they're afraid of me, just because they're shy. Or what will other people think of them if they ask a question? And we have an authoritarian system in which everything that Krishna says is absolute, everything the Guru says is absolute, especially when devotees are in the position of a Guru or spiritual master. And then Prabhupada very much built up temple presidents, GBCs, as real authorities. And so how to have a healthy interaction, how to actually question someone who you also respect as an authority, it requires a system. The system has to be there, and also it requires bravery on part of the devotees. So some devotees, if I give class, they won't ask a question in class, but as soon as I get up, and they'll come and say, well, I didn't want to ask the question in class, but can I say it now?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not brave enough to ask a question in front of someone else. So I think more and more that system is sort of being encouraged for devotees to ask questions, to ask why should I do that, or why was this decision made, or how was that decision made. That also needs to have systems in place. It may require time. But that's not it's not a methodology in ISKCON, and that's why Prabhupada put, for instance, Ishtagostis in place, so that devotees can discuss why things are happening, and have the particular opinion or input or understand things. Want to pursue that a little more?
Okay, this is a new one. I didn't
know. But this on this particular question about asking questions. My also experience is, but that's not always like that, but it's another angle, is that things aren't always the way devotees think or necessarily understand things or necessarily their version of events isn't the full version of events or what actually takes place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everything, all of these things really solve with really good open communication. And communication on part of leadership, communication on part of devotees, it requires expertise. It requires taking responsibility to do that. That it's a duty to do that. So for instance, in Vedic culture, anyone could walk into the court of the king, even with Lord Ramachandra, even the dog walked in, and demand to know why something's happening. And then it's the responsibility of the king to give the answer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the responsibility that a citizen's got the courage that he's walking into the court, and in front of everyone, he's going to say, why is this happening in the kingdom?
Mm-hmm.
So both things really sort of need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we're not trained to be kings, neither are we really trained to be that type of citizens, and we don't live in that type of culture anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be so many imperfections along the road.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I have a question connecting to this, just came into my mind that we have a bhakta court, and I spoke to a few devotees, and I don't know how this bhakta court works, but usually in a court, if someone does something bad, there is someone, you know, on the other side, like, how can I say? So someone does something sinful, and then, but they still have a solicitor, you know, there is still someone who is on, who is, I don't know any.
Representing them.
Again, his side. So he's not alone in a whole court around with, 10, 15 other people who are just pointing out his flaws, his mistakes, you know. And I don't know how it works in our society. Because I know one person who had an experience like this, like he went in the court, in the bhakta court alone, there was, I don't know, how many devotees who were just telling him, this and this, you did wrong, you know, and when he started to say why he did that, they just said, oh, you can say anything, doesn't matter, you know, but it is not fair, so I don't know how this bhakta court works, how they have...
We don't have solicitors or legal representation, even... The present system, which at least we have in Hungary, it's not necessarily everywhere, is so that it isn't the temple president who's making decisions, but they're actually neutral people who have a certain degree of information. And they have a report and information, and then they inquire, okay, what happened, and they listen. And it's not 15 people, it's 3 people.
Mm-hmm.
Difficult to get 15 people to want to do this.
But I don't know.
There's 3 people, and then they hear. They hear both sides, and then like with a judiciary, then they sort of discuss amongst themselves, and then they may come back. Obviously, when one party says one thing and another party says something else, then they have to say, but the other party said this, we don't have either the experience or can't afford to have courts the way there are courts there in the outside world. But at least we're taking the decision making out of the management sphere, and these are people who have got nothing to do with the person's service. They're neutral people, so that they can just concentrate on the case. Although if you talk to any of the judges, you'll say why they don't want to be in that particular position, particularly because it is, it's not an easy situation to be in. And unfortunately, 90% of these things are only about one topic, which is divorce. Mostly husbands leaving their wives.
I was thinking about some completely different case, actually.
Yeah, there are some, but that's what, unfortunately, the courts, the cases are about.
Actually, but this is maybe a more personal thing. I don't know if you want to...
No, if it's personal, I can... You've got a good... recording, but on this other topic,
yeah, I have more.
Yeah, okay. I'm waiting to see when Attila comes back. Okay, so we'll just close off on this.